Hi, this is Josh Cook. Thank you for downloading the North Jackson Church of Christ sermon audio file. If you have any questions or would like to contact us, check out our website at northjacksonchurchofchrist.com. We'd also love for you to visit with us in our worship service. You're always welcome at North Jackson Church of Christ.
Good evening. Adam, Brian, and David, thank you for leading us and getting us off to such a wonderful start. Thanks to each and every one of you for being here tonight. I'm confident that the Lord is pleased that we have chosen to end this day by spending time together in His house, worshiping Him and studying His Word. When you think of the Bible lands or the Holy Lands, perhaps you immediately think of Jerusalem, and Jerusalem is in the middle of the Bible lands. But it's another site that makes you feel like Jesus really did live. What can we learn when we walk where Jesus walked in Jerusalem? Let's talk about it. We're on our way to Jerusalem. We began our study together near the Dead Sea. We started in Qumran with the Dead Sea Scrolls, the copies of the Old Testament. And now we're making our way back up toward Jerusalem. And we've been as far as Caesarea Philippi to the north. We've been as far as Caesarea Maritime to the west. We've been to Bethlehem. And now we've made our way finally to Jerusalem. This is the terrain on the way into Jerusalem, and the road winds through this wilderness of Judea, and as you go through that area, you don't know how anything could ever survive there, and then all of a sudden, you just see the city of Jerusalem. It just kind of rises up out of the ground, looks like it's going to meet the sky. It's on a bigger mountain, if you will. It is a city built on a hill, but as you're driving through this terrain, I thought of the children of Israel trying to make their way through this area. I thought of Jesus when he was in the wilderness of Judea being tempted for 40 days and 40 nights. You wonder, where in the world would you ever find water in such a place like that, or find food? How could you ever exist in a place like that? It is uninhabitable. Jerusalem is a beautiful city. This is the Golden Gate, perhaps the gate that Jesus entered when he entered the city for the very last time. Jerusalem in Jesus' day, and the map is pretty small, I understand. I apologize for that. Jerusalem is the capital of Judea, or Judah rather. And Jerusalem is about 14 miles west of the Dead Sea and about 33 miles east of the Mediterranean Sea. It's about 80 miles south of Nazareth. It's about 2 miles north of Bethlehem. So maybe that gives you some idea of where Jerusalem is located. Bethpage and Bethany both are very close to the city of Jerusalem. This is the hotel where we stayed, just to let you see a little bit about what perhaps the city looks like in a practical way. This is a beautiful hotel. It's called the Olive Tree. In the hotel lobby, you have an olive tree that is spectacular because those are all individual mosaics. It's precious. There's an olive tree that's actually growing in the middle of the hotel. There are all kinds of replicas of artifacts, some of the instruments perhaps that David played, the lyre, or as some translations render it, the harp, but it's not a traditional harp like we think of a harp today. You can see another instrument there also along with this one. And the cafe is called the Holy Cafe. Well, if you're in Jerusalem, where else would you rather eat than a holy cafe? But it's a nice place, it's a clean place, and it's a safe place. We never felt threatened, or at least I didn't. People were very nice. The Arab people are incredibly hospitable. They work hard, and they're very accommodating. And they do take American money. They do take American plastic. And tourism is their number one business. And we stayed in this hotel for several days while we were in Jerusalem. Your day begins at about 7:30 with breakfast. At about 8:30, we're on the road to the next site. We got back into the hotel at about 7 o'clock. You eat supper at about 7:30. You have a devotional at 8:30 at night. And then I'm exhausted. I'm worn out. Kathy and I go back to the room and crash. The kids, the students that were with us, the 20 students that were with us, then went out into the streets of Jerusalem at night. And I thought, not my daughter. If my daughter or my son had been on that trip, they wouldn't have gone out. Of course they would have. But these students went out. They went out in groups, and they were never threatened. They felt safe. They went to areas in the city that we were unable to visit, like the Damascus Gate and other sites, and they were safe going there and coming back, and they had a great time. It's well lit. There's a great deal of security there, as you can imagine. And Americans are loved. So it's a safe place. You never feel threatened. This is Jerusalem from the Mount of Olives. That picture cannot do it justice. This is Kathy taking a picture. This is where we started that morning, because at the top of the Mount of Olives, there is a panoramic view of Jerusalem and the entire city and the Kidron Valley and the Valley of Hinnom, and all of it just spreads out there before you. We're standing atop the Mount of Olives right here. To this area, to my right, your left, would be the Garden of Gethsemane, and we'll talk about it a little bit later. But you're looking at the city of Jerusalem, and it's hard to make it out. That's the Dome of the Rock. That's supposedly Mount Moriah. That's the place where the temple once stood, where the most holy place once stood, they believed, in that general vicinity. This is the wall of Jerusalem that dates back to the 16th century, not BC, but AD. The gate here to, well, it's almost to the far right. But the beautiful gate that we saw just a moment ago is right there. And this is the Kidron Valley that you're looking at. This is the slope of the Mount of Olives. This is the bend. This is the city of David right here. And the Valley of Hinnom would stretch right here. And you're looking at the Kidron Valley where Jesus walked from the Mount of Olives down the Kidron Valley up into the city of Jerusalem. That's why it says in John 2, verse 13, that they went up into the city of Jerusalem. It's a principle of elevation, but it really makes sense when you see it from this particular angle. But Christ would leave this particular place, the Mount of Olives, somewhere in here, and make his way up to the city of Jerusalem. This is another look at it, a drawing of it. This is the city of David. This is the Gihon Spring. That's what we talked about last Sunday night. And Hezekiah's tunnel that goes from the Gihon Spring down to the Pool of Siloam. This is the Kindred Valley. The Mount of Olives would be right here. And this is the entrance into Mount Moriah or the temple or the city of Jerusalem. The Pool of Bethesda, which is right here to the upper right. And then you have Herod's Palace. You have the Valley of Hinnom, and where the Valley of Hinnom and the Kindred Valley meet at this point is the Potter's Field. It's not far from that area that Judas took his life. It would be that particular area in which they would bury Judas and others like him. These are ossuaries. These are all over the side of the hill of the Mount of Olives, and they're above ground because they contain bones. And there are seemingly thousands of these, and they're there because they believe when the Messiah comes, he'll come to the Golden Gate. He'll come to that gate beautiful, and they want to be the first ones to go in. So the closer you are to this gate, you are, of course, closer to going in first. These graves are very expensive. These graves are less expensive. They're all expensive. But they're there because they believe this is where Christ will come. The Jews do. There's a donkey that you can ride there. This is an Arab man who tried to sell us that headdress. He had headdresses for sale. You could also ride his donkey for $5. And his donkey's name was Jesus, which I didn't like, but that's what he called him. And here's why. Well, I don't really know the reason why he did that, but let me give you my thoughts. If you go north, if you go back up the mountain to the back of the Mount of Olives, you go to a city called Bethpage. And when Jesus was getting a donkey to ride into Jerusalem for the last time, they went to Bethpage to get the donkey. And so here's an Arab man who has a donkey you can ride, and he has named him Jesus in honor of that historical place. And they're camels. You can ride camels, $5. Everything's $5. The kids rode camels. We both rode camels. It's very safe. It's not as easy as it looks. They're very tall. They jerk you around quite a bit. But it's pretty fun to be able to say you've ridden one, you've gotten up on one, and survived. The Mount of Olives is mentioned in the Old Testament. And you'll recall when we were studying the life of David in 2 Samuel 15, verse 30, when David was fleeing from the city of Jerusalem and Absalom ran him out of the city, you'll recall he ended up in the Mount of Olives. And of course, Jesus spent a great deal of time in the Mount of Olives with his disciples, and he also prayed there in the Garden of Gethsemane at the Mount of Olives with his disciples. So much occurs at the Mount of Olives. I want to read something from Luke 19. Would you go to Luke 19 with me just for a moment? I wish we had time to read more, but we don't, unfortunately. But I want to read this passage beginning with verse 28 because it says so much about the Mount of Olives, and it says so much about what I have just talked about in reference to Bethpage. Bethany is not far from Bethpage. Bethany is where Jesus would spend the night when he was teaching in Jerusalem, according to Matthew 21, verse 17. Bethany was the home of Lazarus, Mary, and Martha. And Jesus spent a lot of time in Bethany. He would walk down the Mount of Olives. He would walk across the Kidron Valley. He would walk up to the city of Jerusalem and enter into the gates and into the city. In verse 28 of Luke 19, Luke mentions several of these facts. Look at verse 28. When he had said this, he went on ahead, going up to Jerusalem. And it came to pass when he drew near to Bethpage and Bethany at the mountain called Olivet, the Mount of Olives, that he sent two of his disciples, saying, go into the village opposite you, where as you enter you will find a colt tied on which no one has ever sat. Loose it and bring it here. And if anyone asks you, why are you loosing it? Thus you shall say to him, because the Lord has need of it. So those who were sent went their way and found it just as he had said to them. But as they were loosing the colt, the owners of it said to them, why are you loosing the colt? And they said, the Lord has need of him. Then they brought him to Jesus, and they threw their own clothes on the colt, and they set Jesus on him. And as he went, many spread their clothes on the road. Then as he was now drawing near the descent of the Mount of Olives, the whole multitude of the disciples began to rejoice and praise God with a loud voice for all the mighty works they had seen, saying, blessed is the King who comes in the name of the Lord, peace in earth and glory in the highest. And some of the Pharisees called to him from the crowd, teacher, rebuke your disciples. But he answered and said to them, I tell you that if these should keep silent, the stones would immediately cry out. And there's stones everywhere, of course. Now as he drew near, he saw the city and wept over it. All of this taking place in this general vicinity near that one entrance into the great city of Jerusalem. So much occurred there in the ministry of Jesus. Jesus ascended from the Mount of Olives according to Acts 1 verses 9 through 12. So much of Jesus' life, so much of his time with his disciples was spent right there on the Mount of Olives. When you're standing there and you're looking out across the Kindred Valley and you're looking at the city of Jerusalem, you literally feel like you are where Jesus once was. It is incredibly surreal and humbling. These ossuaries made me think of Jesus' comment in Matthew 23, verse 27. You'll remember he said of the Pharisees, on the outside you look like sepulchers that have been whitewashed, but on the inside you're full of what? Dead men's bones. He didn't say dead men, decaying corpses. He said dead men's bones. Jesus knew what he was talking about. This cemetery is the oldest and most important Jewish cemetery we know. It dates back to the first temple. So when Jesus was there during the second temple or the Herodian temple, he would have seen many of these same kinds of sites that you're looking at right now. The Dome of the Rock. We entered into the city that morning through one of the Muslim gates. And it was rather interesting that we did so because there were checkpoints everywhere. There's security everywhere. But as you go through this checkpoint, it's a Muslim checkpoint, so you have to be modestly dressed. And we told the children, that the young people on the trip, make sure that you're modestly dressed. And they all were. We made sure we were all modestly dressed. It was cool there. It was winter for them, so we had our jackets on. But everybody's modestly dressed. But we're going through this checkpoint. Two of the girls are singled out as being immodest. They were not. But they were made to wear dresses given to them by Muslim men. And there was a woman in our group who carried her English Bible with her, and she wanted to read her Bible in the city of Jerusalem, which sounds great to me. They would not let her take her English Bible into the gates. That Muslim checkpoint, she had to leave it outside the gates. They're really stringent and very strict. The Dome of the Rock, you cannot enter. Because as Christians, we're infidels to them. Only Muslims can enter into this shrine. This shrine dates back to the 7th century AD. But this marks the place of Mount Moriah, where Abraham was going to offer Isaac his son in Genesis 22. Now later, temples will be built on this. Solomon will build his temple here. At that point, at that place, Mount Moriah. And so will, after the Babylonians destroy Solomon's temple, Zerubbabel, Ezra, Nehemiah will build another temple there. They'll build the walls around the city, remember. Nehemiah was given the task of completing the walls around the city. And then when Herod comes along in about 20 BC, Herod will build it to the splendor it was in the days of Jesus Christ. But all of it takes place at the Dome of the Rock. As you come up to it, the trees are spectacular. The columns, the arches, date back to the days of the Romans, and Rome occupied the city. The Dome of the Rock, you cannot get in there unless you're Muslim, and if you try to get in and you're not a Muslim, but you lie and you say you are a Muslim, they will ask you to quote a passage from the Quran. It would be like we're trying to get into the church, and somebody says, "Are you a Christian?" "Yes, I am." Well, if you are, then can you quote Matthew, 5, 3 through 10, which would be the Beatitudes. Now, you either get it right or you don't. But to get into the Dome of the Rock or into this mosque, you have to be able to quote a passage from the Quran. They know it that well. And they know if you're trying to fool them or lie to them and quote some other passage, that's a random passage, is not right. They know the Quran that well. They've memorized the Quran that well. But you can't get in. It's unfortunate. They can go anywhere we go. They can go to any Christian site, any Jewish site, but you can't go into their sites. Muslims claim Abraham as their father, as do Jews, as do Christians. The colors, the mosaic colors, are spectacular and intricate, and each one of those colors represents something, but I can't remember exactly what it is. This is a fountain that's near the Dome of the Rock, and to go into that sacred site of the Muslims, you not only have to wash your hands, I don't know if you can see it that well, but you have to wash your hands, and these are seats, and right there you put your feet, and you have to wash your feet too. You have to take your shoes and socks off and wash your feet and wash your hands before you can go into the Dome of the Rock. It's holy ground. That's what Moses was told to do, to take his sandals off because he was standing on holy ground. This is not far from the Dome of the Rock. This is called the Sheep Gate. And it's where the shepherds would bring their sheep into the city and would bring them to pools like the Pool of Bethesda. Bethesda is a pool that's mentioned in John 5 where Jesus heals an impotent man, a man that's lame who tries to get into the water but can't get into the water. There's no one there to help him. And when the waters were stirred, it was believed that there was some medicinal properties in the water and you could be cured of whatever your ailment was. And scientists believe that the water there was spring-fed, of course, from the spring of Gihon, and that it would activate or it would boil up and it would come to the surface, and as it did, it would lift a sediment in the pool, and it was in that mixture that people believed that they could be cured of whatever ailed them. There's a lame man there who can't get in the water because when the water stirred, naturally by the spring, we know now, people beat him to the water. And he doesn't have anyone to help him get into the water. Jesus doesn't help him get into the water, but Jesus heals him instantly. It's a great miracle. The trees that line that particular area are beautiful. There is a church that's there. It's called the Church of St. Anne. And this is the place believed where Mary grew up, Mary the mother of our Lord. Mary's parents lived here near the Pool of Bethesda. The Pool of Bethesda, you can see, goes down quite a bit. You have to go down to get to the bottom of it, because archaeologists have had to cut through the layers of civilizations. There have been numerous civilizations that were there, like the Arabs and the British and the Turks, and on and on the civilizations go. But once you get down there, you see the pool, perhaps what was the pool. It's no longer active, unfortunately. You see the porches. You remember in John 5, there were porches at the Pool of Siloam. Four porches have been found on either side of the pool, and then one arch in the middle of the pool. There it is. Archaeologists have discovered this through great excavation and great labor, but it is spectacular. The city streets of Jerusalem, this is Ararat we were on. The city of Jerusalem is broken up into four quarters. We were in the Jewish quarter, which is closest to the old city. The four quarters, you have the Muslim quarter, the Jewish quarter, the Armenian, and the Christian quarter. Four quarters. Again, some of the flowers that grow along the streets are beautiful. The marketplace, what you've seen in books or what you've seen, sorry. It's just like that. But people are nice. The store owners are nice, and they don't try to rob you. There are, I guess, some there that would, but our guide took us to some safe places where he knew the people, and I felt as safe as I could be. But it's very narrow. It's very close or right on top of you, but they're not used car salesmen in the worst sense of that. Not that there's anything wrong with used car salesmen. I'm just saying, they're not trying to constantly sell you something, okay, make you feel uncomfortable. Here are some children. I think these are Arab children. They're sitting with Dana Blackwelder, and that's just how friendly they are. They're very, very friendly. Some things never change. Here's a Jewish man. I think he's been at the Western Wall recently, maybe praying. He's now at an ATM getting some cash, maybe to go to the Holy Cafe. And in the modern city of Jerusalem, I found this place. It's a smokers club, and smokers are welcome, and so you can go to the smokers club and smoke your life away, I guess. The Western Wall, in the shadow of the Dome of the Rock. The Western Wall, at least a portion of it, is believed to have dated back to the time of Herod, about right here. This is believed to be part of the retaining wall on the western side of the city that dates back to the days of Jesus Christ. You have the Jewish women here and the Jewish men here. Of course, they do not mix. You have people of all ages, Jews of all ages, who are at the Wailing Wall and they're praying. And they are weeping. That's why they call it the Wailing Wall. And they are lamenting the words of Jeremiah in the book of Lamentations. And Lamentations is about the destruction of Jerusalem and the steadfast love of the Lord in Lamentations chapter 3, in which there will be a new Jerusalem someday. They're praying for a new Jerusalem. These are prayers that they stick in the crevices of the Wailing Wall. This is a thorn bush. This is growing right in the side of the Wailing Wall or the Western Wall. I took this picture because it reminds me of the crown of thorns that perhaps they made and placed upon the head of Jesus. These thorn bushes were everywhere, it seemed. This one just seemed to be really striking. Two turtle doves, or two doves, near the Western Gate or the Western Wall. I thought of the turtle doves that Mary and Joseph offered after the birth of Jesus and when Jesus was presented in the temple in Luke 2. Below the Western Wall, and I know I'm running out of time, let me show you one thing. You see that little arch right there? You go through that arch, you go down several stories, 12 I think, and you get down to what they believe to be the city that Jesus knew. So archaeologists have cut through all the layers of the civilizations that existed there. You'll remember that Jerusalem was destroyed by the Romans in AD 70. After that, there were many, many other civilizations built on top of it. So archaeologists have gone down several stories, and they have found what they believe to be the real city of Jerusalem in Jesus' day. This picture represents two arches. Do you see those arches? That's an ancient gate. They believe that was a gate during the days of Jesus Christ. Here's one of the pillars that is rather crude. It doesn't look like the grandiose architecture of the arch we saw going into the Dome of the Rock, but it dates back, they believe, to the days of Jesus Christ. Here is the road that Jesus walked, and then you literally get to walk on it. And when you're walking right there, they tell you this is exactly the streets of ancient Jerusalem when Jesus was there. You may really be walking where Jesus walked. This is the end of the street. The sign at the bottom talks about that this was built during the time of Herod, that there is a break in the building of it. There is a break that's very noticeable in the building of it because they believe it's when Herod died. And then there was a period of time when nothing was done, but then it was resumed. It's a very interesting place. This woman was our tour guide. She and Kathy hit it right off. She didn't like me. She's from Maryland. She's an American, but married to a Jew. And her husband retired or stepped down from being an engineer in Maryland and moved to Jerusalem because he wanted to study the Torah. And here's what she told us. In Jerusalem, men don't work. All that men do all day long, Jewish men, is read the Torah and study the Torah, the law of God. Women work like this woman, and they have to rear their children, and they have to provide childcare for their children. They have to do everything, if you will, while their husbands study the Torah. I wonder how closely they're studying the Torah, because they're missing the headship of the man in his family. The Jerusalem Museum that you walk through is spectacular. Some of the pottery that perhaps dates back to the days of Jesus. The Shrine of the Book. We saw this at the beginning of our study. This is where the Dead Sea Scrolls, some of them are housed. The Isaiah scroll is there. You can see it. The water that you see on the sides of it is to keep it pure, to keep it clean. The Word of God, unadulterated, just the way it was intended to be from God. And then the Jerusalem model, which is, it seems, an acre in size, but it is built so much to specification. Here is the ancient wall. Here is the, I believe, the Valley of Hinnom. Here is the temple. And the reason I wanted you to see this is because of the courtyards. This would be the courtyard of the Gentiles. This would be the beautiful gate. But here is where the Gentiles would be. This is where Jesus taught, where Jesus, when he did miracles in the temple, he did them in this courtyard. These colonnades are called Solomon's colonnades. Perhaps to this side of the colonnades is where the early church met when it says they met in the temple. They did not meet in the temple proper. You could not go into the temple proper unless you were a Levite. Jesus was of the tribe of Judah. Here's more of the details of it. But this would be the courtyard of the women, and this would be the courtyard of the Jewish men. Back in ancient times, there were three courts: the Gentiles, the women, Jewish women, and Jewish men. Back in the hotel, sweet dreams, and it is a dream to be able to go to Jerusalem. But it is not in Jerusalem where I felt Jesus was real. It's standing on the Mount of Olives, where Jesus was many times with his disciples, and one in particular in Matthew 24, when they're looking at the city and they're looking at the temple and all of its splendor, and they're telling Jesus or asking Jesus about how grand it is, and Jesus tells them the day is coming when one stone will not stand upon another. And that day did come when Jerusalem was destroyed by the Romans, but he's telling them this, and they wanted signs, and he gave them some things to think about and some signs to look for with the fall of Jerusalem, but none with the fall of the world, the end of the world, or his second coming. But you stand there or sit there or look out across the valley there, and Jesus becomes real to you. He really did live. He really did walk there. He really is real. And now that we don't believe that, and now that we don't think that, and I know we walk by faith and not by sight, 2 Corinthians 5, verse 7, but when you're standing there, this isn't some place that has been prettied up. This isn't some place where it's all ornaments and gold and silver and opulence. This is just simply a place where a man would sit with his friends, contemplate the great city that his father loved, that his father built, that David built, that had been torn and had become a house of merchandise. How many times he must have looked at that city and wept. Jesus has mercy on those who are broken, those who are helpless, those who cannot fend for themselves, who've been forsaken. Why is the lame man unable to get into the water? Where's his family? Where are his friends? He's forsaken. He's all alone. He's completely broken. But the Lord had mercy on him and healed him at the pool of Bethesda. And then today, Jerusalem is an abandoned and desolate city. And Jesus told them in Matthew 23, 37 and 38, primarily verse 38, he said, I'm calling to you, and I'm like a hen calling her chicks to come and roost underneath the shelter of my wings, and you would not come. And I'm telling you, I will leave your house desolate. When you walk through the streets of Jerusalem, the ancient city of Jerusalem, it's desolate. I mean, they're writing prayers on cards and sticking them in the crevices of a wall they call the Wailing Wall or the Western Wall, hoping and praying that somehow, some way, those prayers will be answered. He has already come. He was yours. He was there. He walked among you. He came to save you. And yet you spurned him, rejected him, crucified him. He said, I'll leave your house desolate. And it is desolate today. It feels abandoned by God. And people in the city of Jerusalem, the Jews in particular, are not the nicest people in the world. They're not the easiest people in the world to be around, and they have an air of self-righteousness that harkens back to the days of Jesus Christ. It just feels like a city that has been abandoned by God, but it isn't too late, even for Jerusalem today, because God has time for each one of us. And if God has time for the broken and the helpless and the forsaken, he certainly has time for the abandoned. But we have to come to him, we have to trust him, and most of all, we must obey him. If you're here tonight and you've not obeyed the gospel, Or if you're here tonight as a Christian, but you've not lived faithfully as a Christian, need to be restored, need the prayers of your brothers and sisters in Christ, whatever your need may be. We're thousands of miles from Jerusalem. We're thousands of miles from the Mount of Olives and thousands of miles from the Pool of Bethesda. But here's the truth. Jesus is right here. He's here. And he's waiting. And he's waiting for you. And if you need to come, will you come now while together we stand and sing?